Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Mentor. I'm Mark Boris. Angus Brown, and I note Professor Andrew Scully. Welcome to the Mentor. So, you guys are the founders, and I guess, well, he says he's chief science officer of AREPA. Did I pronounce that right, AREPA?
Yeah, it's not too bad. AREPA or AREPA is fine.
How do you say it?
AREPA. AREPA. So you slightly roll the R. Yeah,
yeah.
That's
now,
AREPA.
What language are you talking now?
So that's Te Reo Māori. So when we were thinking up this concept, we wanted to give it a name that celebrated our indigeneity of New Zealand. And we were
so
looking.
It's a New Zealand product.
We're an Australasian company now.
Yeah. Originally.
It's made in New Zealand. Yes. Yep. And we were looking at, initially, we wanted to make a drink that could increase alpha brainwave activity. And so alpha brainwaves relate to the state of flow that psychologists deem as what the zone is. And so we thought that would be amazing if we could create a product that could essentially get you into the zone. And working with Professor Scully there, we found some literature to suggest that some of the ingredients that we're working with improved alpha wave activity in the brain. And so we thought, well, that'd be amazing. The transliteration for alpha in Te Reo is AREPA. But what's more cool about that is that AREPA also means, I mean, alpha means many things, but to us and via the name AREPA, it also means the first, and so the first of its kind. And so we kind of believe that we are the first of its kind brain drink that's backed by human clinical research.
Right. So I get it. I won't be able to say AREPA as well as you do.
That's pretty good.
But I get the... So I didn't realize it was sort of based in New Zealand. As I heard you speak, I got your accent. I see you're a New Zealander, and so the whole idea, I guess, came from you guys living in New Zealand. So, and I think that's cool. It's a good name. It's a good name to remember. It's an easy one to spell too. By the way, I had no idea. I've seen the drink around before, but I had no idea of that story. But can you just take me back a little bit though, both of you? Did you both get together on this at the same time? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, so roughly 10 years ago, I was working for the government in food technology out of New Zealand, so kind of similar to what CSIRO is in Australia, but the New Zealand version, a $30 million modular food factory, and we were helping companies develop new high-value food and beverage products. Before that, I was working for a large energy drink company. And before that, I lost family and friends to either mental illness or cognitive related concerns. So I was kind of going on a pathway and starting to be influenced around developing, foods that were good for health and good for the brain. And I started to kind of realize this idea in my mind around creating a brain drink that could one day be bigger than Red Bull, but scientifically formulated and then proven in multiple human clinical studies. And we had a lot of capability from a food technology perspective, but we didn't have any capability from a neuroscience perspective. So A number of different signals were pointing towards Professor Scholey as one of the leading researchers in the fields of nutrition and cognition globally. And I just reached out to him one day and gave him a few emails and a few pesky phone calls and just politely hustled him for 6 months because he's a very busy man and was leading the Center for Human Psychopharmacology at Swinburne University at that time and running multiple clinical studies for both industry and government. And I just slowly convinced him to help me and this kid from New Zealand on this idea of developing, the world's first brain drink. And so we got together and we paid Andrew a consultancy fee for developing the formulation and then kind of went off and, put it into a food matrix, made it taste nice and all those things, made it stable, and then started to undergo our human research. And then probably about six or seven years after that, and we kept in touch over that time with Andrew and feeding him the science that we were doing in New Zealand. And then it became apparent that we really needed a chief science officer to continue and grow our clinical pipeline, help us digest the terabytes of data that we were producing from our clinical research. And COVID had just kicked in, and Andrew thought, well, it'd be a good time to give up academia for a bit and come on a commercial holiday. And so he's been chief science officer with us since then, really.
That's a bit unusual for an academic.
Yeah,
that's a big step. Can I just go back a little bit? So you're at Swinburne?
I was at Swinburne University.
Down in Melbourne, Victoria.
Yeah, so I originally was a scientist in the north of England, then got headhunted by Swinburne, mainly because they were they had great neuroimaging facilities, so sort of brain imaging facilities.
That's an important point. So let's just stop there for one second. So, because, you're talking about alpha waves and as if the whole world knows what you're talking about, they don't. So we'll just dig in a little bit, I think, because it's important because the rep is, it's not making claims, but it is bought for – some people buy for a purpose, and the purpose is quite scientific. And the science is a little bit dense, but we'll dig in a little bit. So first and foremost, we've got to establish someone's credentials over here.
Yep.
So we've got a professor in front. That's good. Human psychopharmacology, importantly, chief science officer for a REPA. Mm-hmm. We'll just put aside, just park alpha waves, beta waves, gamma waves, and which one was which, why you want to concentrate on alpha. We'll park that for a second. Let's get over to psychopharmacology.
Yep.
What the fuck is that?
Okay. So psychopharmacology is...
It sounds scary.
It's basically the study of drugs and their effects on the brain and behavior.
Right.
So that's a sort of, so it's got a long history, as you can imagine. I had a sort of training as a neuroscientist, but for a number of reasons got very interested in the interface between nutrition and brain function. So I've also researched the effects of drugs and alcohol on the brain, but my main area has been looking at how foods and enriched components of food, so nutrients, and some supplements, often which come from a botanical source, can improve or at least have the potential to improve brain function and mood and mental function. So that's kind of a very niche research area, which I was doing for quite a few years in the UK. And then in about 2006 or seven, I was approached by Swinburne, and they were trying to develop a similar sort of capacity. The thing that was attractive, well, it was in Melbourne. That was pretty attractive, I know.
Compared to Northern England.
Yeah. And maybe compared to Sydney, I don't know.
I'm not going to say that. No way.
No, I couldn't possibly say that.
I got audience everywhere, so I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
And I love Sydney, by the way. They had amazing brain imaging facilities. So when...
What does that mean?
That means that when you look at ways in which we image the brain, essentially all you're doing is looking at when and where the brain is active.
We're talking about MRI, fMRI. We're talking about EEG. What are we talking about?
So that's a great.
We're talking about mechanical.
That's a great question.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
So fMRI
yeah.
is your sort of standard brain imaging machine, if you like. So that's...
What does that look like? I mean, these are the machines that they stick you in and feel like you're going into a coffin. Maybe they're
yes,
a bit scary.
That's exactly right.
I've been in
It's
them.
Claustrophobic. They slide you into a tube. It's loud.
Yeah.
And you can look at the structure of the brain, but also the function of the brain. So you can, yeah, for example, flash up, say, words, and then sometime later you have
see
to press
up.
A button if you've seen it before and see what lights up. It's obviously a bit trickier than that because you need a control condition, et cetera. So Swinburne has fMRI, but they also have a methodology called magnetoencephalography, which is obviously a long word, but MEG, which is a bit like EEG, which is electroencephalography, but with EEG, the signal is smeared by the skull. So it's very hard to locate where in the brain is active and which is what area of the brain is producing that signal.
These are the ones we put a cap on.
Yeah, exactly.
With little electrodes or little sensors all around the thing. It looks a bit weird and it's
yes.
attached to a machine which reads
yes.
the sensors.
MEG is slightly different. It's a bit like sitting in one of those old-fashioned hair dryers from the 50s. You sit in there and it has a number of couple of hundred superconductors. So it's cooled by helium. And it's very good at picking up when activity happens in the brain and where, but it's quite cutting edge. So unlike fMRI, where there are standard procedures, MEG, it needs somebody who understands how to sort of, it's called deconvolute the brain to look at where the signal's arising. But essentially these were great toys and very
which attracted
edge,
you.
Which attracted me, and particularly the idea that they could be applied to this particular area of psychopharmacology, that was very new, and particularly the area of nutrition in the brain.
So if nutrition's a sort of broad word, like saying to someone you love them, you can say you love your kids, you love your dog, but this love covers everything, nutrition covers a lot.
Yeah.
So really what we're talking about is how does someone's brain react when you ingest certain however you ingest it, whether it's through the vein or in your guts or even probably smelling it perhaps. How do you, when you ingest certain chemical compounds, certain compounds?
Yeah. I mean,
which nutrition's all about.
Yes.
They're just compounds of coming out of food.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. Like
things like the matrix that the food's in. But yeah, I sometimes talk about Nutra intervention. So Nutra is nutrition, nutraceuticals. So these are components of food which are put into a pill usually.
Yep.
Functional foods where you've got a normal food, but it's enriched in something like folate for breads, for example. Sort of supplements which contain either nutrients or enriched components, as I said, normally from a botanical source. So that might be something like, let's give an example that people might have heard of would be something like ginkgo biloba or ginseng or resveratrol from red wine in a pill. So those are the kind of interventions that I'm interested in. And then having done several decades of research on those over the years, I was really in a position where I wanted to do something a bit more sort of practical, translation, as they call it. I've got all the papers and grant money that
theory.
I need in the background. And about 10 years ago, Angus approached me, and I think he was compelling or persistent. Anyway, he sort of pestered me, and what happened was he had this idea, and I said, look, okay, I'll do this. I had a spare weekend, so I thought, right, I'll just sort of say, well, you have to pay me a little bit of money, but I'll do this. And it had a pretty clear remit. Was had to have a kind of New Zealand based ingredient as the hero ingredient or the main ingredient. But other than that, what really attracted me, I think, to the project at that point was just it was very much had to be backed by science. It wasn't just, there's so many supplements that are around that most of them are just bullshit, actually. But this was, he wanted pharmacologically or biologically active amounts and wanted something with some science behind it. So what I thought would be a kind of two-sider, just because I think of my nature, I ended up spending a lot longer and I kept delaying it because I really got my head into this project. This is so interesting. I dug it out the other day, actually, Angus. I think it was a 64 page document with all the references, which, I actually enjoyed doing, which is probably quite sad. And from that, Angus and the team, I think, picked the ingredients that could work in a drink for all the commercial reasons, which, I don't understand. And that was it, I think, back in about 8-10 years ago. Yeah.
So why, I don't know who's going to answer this question, but why alpha waves? So maybe we could explain how the brain waves, what are the brain waves and what is the state of our body when particular brain waves are less active, more active. So let's say when at 4 a.m. in the morning when I'm hear the alarm go off, what's going on then? Which brain waves are hanging out the most?
Yeah.
Well, I guess, I think like when we first concepted this idea, being a young kind of naive entrepreneur and looking at the high level literature, we thought,
which literature do you look at? Do you go to Google Scholar? Do you go to PubMed? What are you looking at?
Yeah, those two platforms basically. Yeah. Whatever you can get the access to.
Yeah, and you're inquiring.
And you're looking at published research on ingredients and that done in humans.
Yeah.
But the idea of a drink that increased alpha brainwave activity was the idea, but that's how we got the name. But the essence of the project was to create a drink that was natural, that was caffeine-free, that could improve aspects of your mental performance, but equally reduce your stress and or improve your mood because, caffeine and other supplements, they might make you kind of alert, but they do nothing for your stress. In fact, they actually exacerbate your stress. And then we wanted the drink, if consumed regularly, to improve your brain health over the long term. So that was like the key brief that we gave to Andrew. The whole idea around brainwaves was something that kind of connected to the name partly. And we have been looking at research into that. But as we've progressed with our pipeline of clinical studies, we've uncovered so much more interesting discoveries that's kind of just like a side project, that the real mechanisms of action are far more exciting and I guess globally competitive to, it'd be hard to find a drink or food product that you could pick up at a gas station with the same level of evidence that we have in the space that we're researching, which we think is quite transformative.
So I think you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not so much trying to change our brain's behavior to enhance our alpha waves.
No, there's a couple of mechanisms, and I'll pass over to Andrew now in terms of how we think it works.
Can you explain, just be irrespective of mm-hmm. whether it triggers alpha waves or doesn't do anything to mm-hmm. it, whatever, can you just explain about this brainwave stuff? Like, what's the deal there?
Yeah, so effectively what happens is the more cognitively active you are, you get different patterns of brainwaves. These were discovered, actually, we'll be coming up to the 100th anniversary. I think it was 1929. And what happens is that...
What do you mean brainwave? Is it an electrical signal?
It's an electrical signal. So you were talking about the electrodes that are stuck on the brain. And so what you see when you just stick those electrodes on the brain is a mess. It's chaos. It's like... It's like a footy crowd who are all shouting different things. And then there are ways in which you can pull out individual waveforms. And that's a little bit when the footy crowd starts a chant or something, if you like. And those particular waveforms kick in during different mental states. And they're associated with different types of mental processing. And there are four main ones. theta, gamma, delta, and alpha. And alpha is associated with a state of kind of relaxation, but it can be associated not just with, I mean, for example, it kicks in when you're about to fall asleep. When you're asleep, you get a very complex set of different patterns depending on which stage of sleep you're in. But alpha is also associated, for example, when people meditate, alpha kicks in. And it's more recently, there's been some research showing that it's associated with this flow state, which is this...
I don't know what you mean by flow state.
Flow is when you are dealing with a mental workload and you've got the resources to deal with it. So one of the reasons that we get stressed is when we don't have the resources to cope with the workload. So that could be physical stress, so you know, lifting a weight and that becoming too much for us. But cognitive stress or workload stress is where we have a task, a cognitive task, that can be an everyday work task, or it can be trying to deal with many different things at once, and we don't have the cognitive resources to deal with it. And it is a little bit like an economy. So there are ways in which you can build up your mental resources so that a workload that might have seemed overwhelming, for example, isn't, or you know, it may be a strategy for dealing with a task, for example. And so that the flow state kicks in, alpha waves, and a flow state describes the ability to deal with that mental workload with less effort.
So, and therefore less stress.
Or less stress.
Or probably more important, less dependence on your, less response of cortisol into your system, which will cause the stress. In other words, you don't start shitting yourself.
Yeah.
And then you go in a position where you can't make any judgments because what's flying around your blood is the wrong thing. So you can make better judgments.
I mean, cortisol's part of the story.
Well, I'm just throwing stuff out there, but like, because I'm not a scientist, but like, so I guess what we're talking about here is the, I don't want to call it the gold standard. That's not going to look very good from a scientist point of view, but the state we would like to be in if we are trying to behave in a really high performance level. Yeah. Is we want to be in that state that you mentioned before that you get from meditation or just before you go to sleep, that alpha state, or that being a predominant wave. And we're talking electrical waves. We're talking about the difference between these various waves that you described.
Yeah.
is based on the distance of the wave. Is wavelength wave?
Yes.
Height, so to speak.
Yeah, it's actually the. Yeah, length. Frequency rather than the amplitude.
It's more the length, the frequency. Yeah. So, and as you said, like right now we're sitting here and we could measure it. You could actually see it. And I guess a bit of a dense question before I go to the break, but the brain is like a big chemical electrical system happen all the time because the electrical stuff comes about as a result of certain chemicals being in your brain and a sufficient amount of chemicals being in your brain because there's a whole lot of pathways that got to be crossed over for the, you know, to create the electrical currents.
Yeah.
But the electrical currents, I guess, are needed so that we can stimulate neurologically certain outcomes in our brain or certain judgments or certain decisions. So how does food affect that?
Yeah. Okay, so that's
this is an great, important question before we go to the break.
No, that's a great question.
Or lack of food, or maybe lack of the right food.
Yeah.
Or the right presence of right things.
Okay, I'll try and keep this brief because I could talk about that hours and hours and hours, and I'd love to, but I won't. So you're right. So there are these sort of patterns of activation which I've talked about, but essentially the brain is a kind of soup of electrical and chemical signals. There are these neurotransmitters. We're discovering new ones all the time, 100 that we know of. There are probably hundreds more. And the way in which those signals are propagated is by a kind of electrical signal along neurons and a kind of the release of a chemical is effectively associated with electrochemical. And it's complex. It's not, there isn't going to be a double helix of brain function. the more we know about it, the more complicated it becomes, and the brain doesn't give up its secrets easily either. It's quite hard to probe that kind of activation. When we look at the ways in which we probe that activation or those patterns of activation, and particularly how they're translated into thoughts, memories, emotions, you know, that's the big question of neuroscience, and we're scratching the surface of that, but that's the big question. Back to the question of how foods affect the brain, there are different ways. So one is that the brain is an extremely greedy organ. It's about 2% of our body weight and accounts for about maybe 20-25% of our energy. And that's, you know, you don't have to be doing differential calculus. It's just sitting around watching Netflix. It's always churning away at that amount of energy. Bizarrely, the brain doesn't store glucose in the way that liver muscle does. So it's a kind of almost like a design fault. So it relies on a constant blood supply. So, you may know that the brain, you know, people talk about gray matter, but if you look at a living brain, it's actually pink because it's very richly vascularized. It's got this very rich blood supply. And so one way in which we can improve brain function through food is by ingesting foods which improve blood flow to the brain. So we know that a class of compounds found in fruit and vegetable, for example, called polyphenols, including things like anthocyanins, which are found in berries, can improve blood flow. They improve blood flow to the periphery. So you can measure that increase in blood flow in the arm, but also we can measure it in the brain. So that's one way. Ways in which, and in fact, that's one of the mechanisms of AREPA. We know that now. The other way is through improving glucose utilization. So the way in which the brain burns glucose, and there are certain components of diet which seem to do that, and particularly interventions which may be kind of dampen down the glucose spike. So one good way of improving your brain function very quickly is to take a slug of glucose, but obviously long term that's not a great idea. Interventions which increase glucose slightly over a longer period have shown to be very good for things like memory. We know that berries do that, and AREPA does that, for example. And then the other one is actually probably the most interesting, which is direct effects on neurotransmitters. So amongst the dozens of neurotransmitters, the ones that kind of people know about are things like dopamine, serotonin, adrenaline, noradrenaline, or norepinephrine, as it's known in the States. And those are involved in increased mood, increased motivation, and increased performance, mental performance. And the way in which they work is that they are, they're released. They're the chemical messengers that you talked about. And then they're instantly broken down again. So it's like this constant churn of neurotransmitters. And then they're the three that I talked about, dopamine, serotonin, and noradrenaline, are broken down by an enzyme called monoamine oxidase. So if you've got a compound that prevents the breakdown of those three neurotransmitters, then that's going to increase the levels and have a knock-on effect on mood and mental performance.
A longer effect.
A longer effect, yeah, a maintenance effect. And one of the things that attracted me to AREPA was that there are studies showing that the berry, the New Zealand blackcurrant, which is the hero ingredient, has that property. And that is, it's a monoamine oxidase inhibitor. And not only does it have that property in the test tube, it's not in a Petri dish. This is studies in humans where they've been given the equivalent of a drink of AREPA, and then they have this enzyme measured. You can't measure it in the brain, unfortunately. You have to measure it in blood, but we know that blood is a good proxy for brain levels. And it has, it inhibits this enzyme for, well, the latest research is for 8 hours after a single drink. So that's probably one of the main mechanisms. And that hasn't been shown. It may be there in other foodstuffs, but it hasn't been shown in human feeding studies. So it's very exciting.
Well, so, and that, whilst that's a little bit dense to the listeners, sorry. I mean, that, no.
Yep.
No, it's not, I'm sorry. It's important because we're going to get the break. But that takes us sort of to, I want to talk to you, Angus, about once all these things have been sort of, you know, studied and looked at, and we just talked about the hero ingredient in arepa. I want to talk to you about how you source these things. How do you know the right balance, the right dosages? Probably a better way of putting it. And of course, once you got your drink ready, like how you then went off to, you know, let the world know about it, and how you then distributed it. And I have seen around here in Australia, but I think that's sort of a really good juncture for us to sort of take a break for a second and let everybody get their brain, give them a bit of breathing, have a glass of arepa, and then get back into this in the second half where we talk about the commercials. I think that was I appreciate that you just went through the whole process for us.
Yeah.
That's really important. Certainly important to me because...
I got a bit carried away with that.
No, you did not at all.
I could give a simple version, which is increasing neurotransmitters.
But that's not enough for me.
Okay.
Because I like to know how the chemistry works and how the because, you know, everyone goes, oh, chemistry and electricity, they're all the same thing. One results in the other one.
Yeah.
For you to get electrical change, you need certain chemistry to exist. I mean, like just between... neurons, you need certain chemistry within the neuron. Like sodium is really important and potassium is really important. These things
it's the exchange of sodium potassium that generates the electrical signal.
Correct. And most people don't know that, but at the end, that's why I said before, when you talk about nutrition, we're talking about having the right chemistry in the brain. And you talked about, I didn't realize this, but the right amount of blood flowing around the brain as well. So those things which excite the blood to flow to allow these responses to occur. And then at the same time, you've got an inhibitor there as well in your drink, or not in the drink, in the berry, which actually allows this happy little bit of chemistry to exist for a longer period of time. That's sort of the thesis.
Yep.
Underplaying it too much. I'm a neuroscientist. I'm just sort of trying to put in a summary. But it's good to go to the break. Come straight back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Okay, I'm back from the break, and we just went through the dense stuff, and dense as in complicated as opposed to stupid, because our professor is far from stupid. And Angus, can you just take me through, once Andrew helped you formulate this, and a lot of these things probably didn't happen day one, they're probably been evolved over time as well. Tell me about how the hell you found... this berry, I've never heard of the berry, by the way, this berry, Like, how'd you know? I mean, did you find out about the berry that this particular berry had this attribute, or did you know this berry might have had this attribute? And you were saying, could you tell me if does it have this attribute and what does this attribute do?
Yeah. So blackcurrant's been around for a while.
Is blackcurrant? Like,
so it's a berry that has come from Europe, I think, hundreds of years ago. You know, we've got evidence to show that it's been traditionally consumed in parts of Europe.
So it's not a Maori berry, it's something that's pertains to
Then it was imported to New Zealand, and then our equivalent to CSIRO called Plant and Food Research, one equivalent, are very good at breeding plants naturally. And so they have bred the golden kiwi fruit that you find around the world.
Beautiful, love it.
And they bred a new variety of blackcurrant that has got a higher amount of this glycoside that we've been the first in the world to discover. And this glycoside is the compound responsible for this quite potent Mao effect that this blackcurrant variety is exhibiting. And so we call it neuroberry. The real name is Blackadder, but
what is it?
Blackadder,
as in the comedy.
Yeah, that's just the variety of this blackcurrant. And New Zealand happens to be very, very good at growing blackcurrants.
Can I just stop you there for a sec? So
yeah,
In terms of the blackcurrant, and as you said, the CSIRO sort of somehow got involved in a varietal of this blackcurrant, which is your hero ingredient. Is there anything that, I mean, New Zealand has got this sort of magical sort of, sense about it. You know, it's clean, it's remote from everywhere else, it's unaffected, you know, it's where everybody's going to escape to. They're all building their caves there to escape to. There's a world war, all that sort of stuff. And it's a beautiful place too, by the way, and it's not overcrowded, et cetera. But it's got this sort of sense of purity or cleanliness to it, a provenance associated with just about everything comes out of. Australia has too, but New Zealand more so, I think. Australians, please don't upset me for saying that. But is there anything perhaps that might be in terms of the soil and the weather and perhaps the fact that it rains it all the time, is there something in the New Zealand soil infrastructure that makes your berry more potent?
Yes, so blackcurrants are quite high. Their special property compared to, you know, any other berry around the world is that they are very high in the color pigment, so anthocyanins, which Andrew brought up earlier, which are the compound in berries and other foods kind of responsible for this blood flow effect.
That's the skin, color of the skin.
Yes. And so blackcurrants are very, very dark purple. They have a very, very high amount of the red anthocyanins called cyanidins and the blue anthocyanins called delphinidins. And they have a unique combination and a high amount of both. Plus, they have a very high amount of vitamin C, possibly the most amount of vitamin C compared to any berry fruit grown commercially around the world. And then on top of that, we've discovered this unique Mao inhibitor effect from
what
this.
What
was
that?
Oh,
that's the inhibitor in terms of, I get it.
Yeah, just imagine it
what
as.
What do you call it, Mao? M-A-O?
M-A-O, yeah. So
M-A-O.
Another way to, and this is how I kind of communicate it in lay speak, is imagine the Mao enzyme as a Pac-Man cruising around your brain and it's eating up all your dopamine and serotonin and noradrenaline. And so this blackcurrant has got this glycoside in it that kind of stops that Pac-Man from eating up your precious neurotransmitters.
Why does the body do that, by the way? Why does the body, is this some sort of homeostasis or something?
It's a recycling mechanism.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the same as with all proteins. There's this sort of continual building and breaking down.
Right, okay. Got that. So so your Pac-Man is going around gobbling up this process.
Yeah, yeah. Our guy is gobbling up the Pac-Man.
You're right. I got it wrong. Your guy is putting the chains on the Pac-Man, who's
correct.
Gobbling up these neurotransmitters, which are nice to have if we want to stay in this alpha state of being creative and on the go.
Yeah, and we believe we're doing it safely and reversibly, because there are pharmaceutical Mao inhibitors that A lot stronger, and
oh, is that right?
And also some of them are irreversible, so that they have this change, which is not necessarily a good thing over the long term. So we're a very natural and safe MAO inhibitor, which is really interesting as well.
Right. Okay. So what is the sort of like? I mean, I don't want to get too weird on this, but like your drink, the level of the quantity that you of the compound that you put into the drink, the coming out of these berries.
Yep.
Is there like what's sort of the half life? And I mean, like, are we talking about a day, a half day, 2 hours, 3 hours? I mean, what are we looking at here?
As Andrew mentioned earlier, the same quantity of blackcurrant found in our drink was measured to have 8 hours of MAO inhibition from one single dose of consuming.
Which means half life is what, something different to that.
Well, yeah, the half life. We don't know what the half life is. I think the half life would be about. I'm just picturing the graphs now. Probably about 6 hours.
So, and then it runs off faster.
And then it runs off, and we know that it's disappeared by the next day.
Okay, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not hanging around. It's not sort of going down and hanging out in your liver.
Yeah.
And I guess that your body can metabolize. So that's therefore your body metabolizes this particular compound quite readily.
Yeah. Exactly. And we really wanted this product to be safe. Like when we were briefing Andrew, you know, there was news coming out that kids were drinking, you know, a large amount of multiple energy drinks and then having, you know, cardiovascular dysfunction.
Yeah, sort of that was where I'm going from.
Yeah, so we wanted, you know, like, and so we were stress testing this formula, you know, what happens if a stupid kid drinks 12 of these? You know, what happens? And so there are all those considerations that go into creating something, because if we're going to make millions, and we've made over 10 million now of this drink, you know, what make sure that it's safe. So we found this berry just because you speak to scientists in New Zealand, you say, hey, what's a good brain food? You know, what's New Zealand's best brain food? And to answer your question around what's unique about produce coming out of New Zealand, so there is the soil element, we think, especially in wine, but possibly more importantly, the bigger contributor to what makes New Zealand horticulture more bioactive is this higher exposure to UV. And so
higher exposure to UV.
Yeah, so New Zealand has some of the highest levels of UV radiation anywhere in the world. And a study was done to show the same varieties of blackcurrant grown around the world. New Zealand had a much larger level of anthocyanins, that colour pigment, the antioxidant responsible for a number of different things, versus the same variety grown elsewhere.
Is that because of the... Is that due to photosynthesis or a sort of different level of photosynthesis given the amount of...
So plants, they react to UV. It's kind of like their protection mechanism. And so the more UV, the more of this protection mechanism they express. And that protection mechanism is sometimes polyphenols. And that's the good beneficial compounds in foods that we eat.
Okay,
so they're kind of supercharged, basically.
Yeah, that's amazing. I like that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it makes sense. I didn't know New Zealand had such a high exposure of UV radiation.
Yeah.
People don't think about that in relation to New Zealand. Normally you think about it as wet and cold and think Gold Coast, maybe that bit.
Yeah, but you come, especially the summer that we're having, you come over for a few days and you can feel it. It's a burny heat.
Wow.
It's not a warm heat that Australia or parts of Europe get.
And, Europe definitely,
And so, yeah, so we have this kind of growing advantage.
Can you get enough?
Which is interesting.
Of your volume of your product?
Purely out of New Zealand, no. We became the biggest buyer of black currants in Australasia, and we bought more than what Ribena had bought out of New Zealand for a period of time.
So what is Ribena? Has it got the same?
So Ribena is at one point a billion-dollar.
I know what it is, but what black. are they using the same?
No, so Ribena uses at most, say, apart from their concentrates, like 10% blackcurrant juice and then sugar and water and flavour.
Right, right.
And it's a blackcurrant juice drink.
Is it the same sort of blackcurrant though?
No, they used more, they use wines with high sugar profiles.
Right, just more palatable, or maybe not palatable, but people think it's more palatable because it's more sweet.
Correct.
Could I just stop you there for a second?
Yeah.
So I get it. So you're now sourcing, which makes sense. You're sourcing your juice or your berries to make your juice from other places. That's fair enough.
We brought on investment from the largest black currant grower in the country to be vertically integrated with our supply chain. Right. And we did that equally with the company that does the pine bark extract. And we did that on purpose to secure supply chain enable scalability. But as we grew, we realized, oh, wow, we're actually starting to buy all of your black currants. We're going to need to set up a global supply chain in order for us to be to supply, you know, big markets in time. And so we tested black currants from around the world. And we actually, and because we were the first in the world to discover this glycoside that's responsible for this Mao effect, we realized it wasn't actually special to this one New Zealand plant variety, right? It's actually present in most black currants, but it's really high in this New Zealand one, and it's also kind of high in other varieties around the world. And so we've tracked down where those varieties are growing, and we've now established supply chains from those suppliers around the world as well.
So you got your supply chain right. I mean, I'm not going to get into bottling and all that sort of stuff, that type of boxing it up and all that. I'm not going to get into that. So you got your supply chain for your berries, your ingredients.
Yes.
Apart from the berries, I mean, what other active ingredients have you got in there?
Yep. So we have a pine bark extract.
Now, what does that do?
So
it's an actual pine bark from pine bark.
Yeah.
Of a pine tree.
Tastes like bark. And so we spent, Andrew suggested,
what does that do that?
It's got a high amount of similar compounds to the color pigment in black currants. They're called oligoproanthocyanidins. They help with endothelial blood flow and that blood flow mechanism to the brain.
So when you say endothelial blood flow, you're talking about the inside of the walls of the
veins.
The blood flowing in.
Yeah.
So because endothelia has been a bit of a weird word, not many people.
Vein.
But endo means inside. Thelia means so inside the artery or the vein.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah it's the walls.
Yeah.
Effectively, it's the cells.
Yep.
And what it's was not the walls, it's the cells which make the walls.
And what was really interesting is that this humble New Zealand company had some like quite powerful customer testimonies, anecdotal testimonies of parents providing this to their kids who are on the spectrum.
As in pine bark extract.
The pine bark extract. And it was a natural supplement for people who had, who were on the kind of neuro spectrum. And they were seeing some really amazing results. And there was some research that.
As a neurodivergent, what they call them.
And then there was some research that Andrew and his colleagues had done at Swinburne. And that was kind of the reason why we also went to Swinburne. Was because our pine bark supplier was saying, hey, we've done this research. Have you heard of this guy? And we're like, hey, we actually have. And so kind of, the signals were pointing. And they had, what did you prove that pine bark could
that
do
was, that yeah, it was led by a colleague of mine, Andrew Papingas, and that was looking at the effects on working memory. So this pine bark extract called enzogenol is also a very powerful antioxidant. And without getting too technical, because the brain is so active in terms of energy, it also is susceptible to damage from oxidative stress, which is what antioxidants protect against.
Basically creating some rust in the brain.
Exactly. Yeah. Really good way of putting it. And this kind of is anti-rust.
Gets rid of the rust.
Yeah. And so it affects. So it also is neuroprotective. And we know that this rusting, this oxidative stress is implicated in all sorts of disorders, neurological disorders, particularly Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease. But what Papingas showed was that in terms of, I think what's important for me is looking at how this manifests itself behaviorally. So what are the behavioral, what are the cognitive effects directly, and there are many, many ways of doing this, but there are now sort of accepted ways of testing our mental function. So whether that's attention, roughly speaking, concentration, whether it's working memory, which is when you hold information in mind, or whether it's memory when you're retrieving some stored information, or whether it's planning or being able to multitask. There are ways of testing these. And what we found, or what Papingas found with this pine bark extract is that it improves working memory. So the ability to kind of memorize new information. Like if you memorize a new PIN, You know that thing we do these days where you're given a two-factor authentication? You're on an app. It says, oh, we've sent you a text. Here's a six-digit number. You go to your text, look at the number. If you don't cheat and swap back to your app, while you're swapping between those apps and you're holding that information, you're using working memory. It's a really important aspect of mental function. And we found that it improves working memory. Andrew found it. Andrew Papingas found it improves working memory. So, yeah.
So we've got pine bark.
Yep.
Can you tell me the name of the species of pine tree?
Pinus radiata.
Radiata?
So New Zealand's timber industry, the waste stream of New Zealand's timber industry. So literally everyone know that, you know, like the skin and fruit has got some of the highest levels of polyphenols. It's the same in trees. It's the bark in trees that have some of the really more interesting
Which protects the tree.
Exactly. And
makes sense.
And so
never thought of it that way, but
and yeah. Also New Zealand pine grows three times faster than pine grown in Canada. So I think there's that UV kind of element there as well in pine.
And what any other active ingredients apart?
And then the third ingredient is L-theanine. So, and that was the compound that we had the literature on saying it supported alpha brainwave activity. I think, did you do that study or was that?
I've done some studies on L-theanine, yeah.
Yeah. And so those three ingredients. So L-theanine is a very popular supplement used for, you know, mood. And it's got this really interesting effect around countering the negative effects of caffeine with the systolic blood pressure change. And so it's found naturally in green tea. And so we really like the idea of having kind of these two like New Zealandish compounds, but that was scalable with this very globally popular compound called L-theanine.
L-theanine as in letter L apostrophe theanine.
Theanine, yeah.
Not
that's
L,
right.
A-L. That's yeah. Not one word. Just in case anyone wants to look it up.
And yeah, there's you know, a huge amount of research done on it, and often the research that gets cited by supplement companies is the research that Andrew's done on L-theanine.
Okay, food scientists. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm going to run out of time. But I need to know this stuff before we run out of time. Scientists, yep. It is about telling you what the behavior changes or the behavior enhancements can be. You got to get someone to make this taste all right, and you got to you need a food scientist.
Yep.
How the fuck did you make it taste good? Because those three things probably taste like shit.
Yep.
And you've got to have a certain colour. It's got to look nice. Mm-hmm. It's got to smell nice. It's got to have a certain good consistency. Is there any what are you putting in there in terms of
make it sweet?
Sweetness, if you use that word. I don't want sweet. Yeah. Hopefully it's not a sweetener, but like, what do you got in there?
No, that's cool. So I was really fortunate where I was working for kind of central government on the frontier of food tech. And so this is my domain. And so when we first got the ingredients, we put it into a cup of water and just kind of like, holy smokes.
Yeah.
No, okay. So we worked with a very clever flavor house that have a range of natural flavors that actually mask the bitterness and astringency of these really punchy bioactives.
So what would you call your flavor profile? What do you call it?
Like a mulled wine.
Okay, that'll do me.
And then there's the light and sparkling version, which has got much less calories and more and a sparkling. And so but if you look on the back of the label of our performance one, which is where more of our research is heading towards, it's got 50% neuroberry juice. It's got a small amount of organic apple juice that we source from
New Zealand. To give it a sweet taste.
To give it a little bit of a sweet taste, but we're only 5 grams.
Yeah, a bit of fructose, won't hurt us.
And we're also low GI, which is really important.
Right.
And the pine bark helps facilitate some of that benefit.
So you're not sticking in there all these.
We've got at the moment we use stevia, so that's a plant, high intense sweetener, and erythritol, and so that's a low sugar, low calorie sweetener, natural sweetener. We're actually we're pulling erythritol out. We're replacing that with monk fruit. That's our sweetener platform. But these are like, this is on the pointy end of flavor science, and we're spending quite a lot of time and effort to get this right. What probably has helped us establishing all our research is that we had to make a taste match placebo. So when I first was knocking on the door of working with universities to do human research on our drink, they were like, well, you need placebo, mate. And I was like, what's a placebo? say, oh, something that looks like you drink, tastes like you drink.
There's none of the shit in there.
But none of the stuff in there. But we taste the way we do because of the blackcurrant and because of the pine bark and because of the L-theanine. So we worked with this flavor house to make something that tasted like it, looked like it, and had all the carbohydrate vitamin C profile, but without any of the bioactives. That whole project took over a year. But because of that, that's enabled us to do the
gold, research with controls and
the gold standard double-blind crossover placebo controlled.
Yeah. No, that's great. So, because I'm running short time, but I actually am fascinated with these sorts of conversations. But so you've got your ingredients, you've got the ability to do proper testing or proper research around the actual drink versus not actual drink, although it looks like an actual drink with real people. And so you're building your research. You said you had terabytes of data, so I guess you got lots of data points. In over, how many, 10 years now? 10 years? You said 10 years, yep. That's amazing. Of course, Prof over here is, I presume, you're continually looking at publications and trying to get it. You got any high-ranking journal publications yet for this?
For this? Yeah. There's a quite a few out.
You didn't tell me you got Nature or something?
No, not Nature, not quite Nature. We've got a couple of things in the pipeline.
Good, you got some under review?
Yep.
Yeah, good on you.
One being submitted today, actually.
Oh, really?
And then there's a couple on the berry itself, which are sort of published in exactly the right journals you'd expect, Nutritional Neuroscience and Journal of Functional Foods, which are both highly regarded in this field, field specific.
We've published three already on our formula, and then we've got probably, I'd say, over seven different papers coming out over the next kind of like 2 years.
And basically, why I ask that question is pretty obvious to you, but just for the audience, it's this is about the credibility for investors, for example. It's probably not so much for consumers because consumers aren't going to read the papers. Some might these days, but probably not necessarily. But because I wanted to ask you the next question. I mean, you've produced 10 million bottles so far. So have you bootstrapped that or you have brought investors on?
Yeah, so we brought on seed capital. My co-founder, Zach, who's a really talented industrial designer, his father gave us the seed capital to pay Professor Scholey to do the initial formulation. And then we always want to take on smart money, so money that could add value to our business beyond capital. And so that was taking on investment from the pine bark company, from the blackcurrant supplier, and more recently we've taken on investment from previous executives of very large horticulture and health food companies. So the two ex-CEOs of Zespri, the $4 billion kiwi fruit company, the founder of Comvita, the kind of world's top Manuka honey companies. They've all now invested in us to...
you just said Manuka honey. I mean, I'm going to.
Now you guys own Manuka.
Well,
you guys
are because Manuka. It came from us originally. So our trees are because the Manuka tree, the flower that grows on the tree that the bees like to hit, which by the way is an extraordinarily small flower.
It's tiny.
The original trees came out of Australia, but you guys just done a better job of marketing it.
Yeah, or discovering the science.
New Zealanders, that is.
We discovered the UMF factor. And so, yeah, one of the founder of Comvita, Alan Balgin, he's invested in us. But
a great product, Manuka honey as a brand, my God, is so smart. It's so good.
Yeah, as a topical to reduce the time it takes to recover from a wound, it's quite potent. So we brought these investors on. We're continuously doing research. We have probably more research underway on a single branded product that you pick up a supermarket shelf than any other like drink in our space.
Okay, distribution. You said supermarket. So how do you distribute apart from online? You can buy it online, can't you?
Yeah. So 30% of our revenue comes from online direct to consumer, and then 70% comes from us getting our product into the places where you'd expect to pick up a drink. So,
for example, where can you get it?
So Woolies, Coles, Ampol, BP, independent health food stores, Harris Farms, and then in New Zealand, Woolies, Foodstuffs. We are in New Zealand now, we are the highest value selling health drink in our category.
Right. And I've got two more questions for you, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
And maybe you share the answer, but it's probably more commercial related, but although it's maybe not. You guys have hit a nerve early, and that nerve is you know, the unexplored, one of the most important unexplored parts of the universe, which, you know, the smart money's on. Musk is in both parts of the unexplored universe, that is outer space and the brain. He's got, obviously got, yep. He's been making announcements more recently about Neuralink. Mm-hmm. Why are you two guys excited about, I know there's a drink, I get it, but there's more to it. This is about exploring how the brain works and there's more to it. I mean, over time, in 20 years' time, I'll be talking to you guys and you'll be telling me, if I'm around, I better get onto the drink. But if I'm around, cognitively I'm talking about, if I'm around cognitively, you're going to tell me there's 40 more iterations of a Rapid drink. Now you've got six more formulations and you've got something that's not only maybe enhancing or putting the chains on the Pac-Man and the gobbling up these neurotransmitters, but you might say there's another 20 other things we're doing that we've discovered over that period of time. Why are you guys so excited about the exploration of the inner space as opposed to the outer space?
So the whole reason why I started this company was
why now?
Why now?
What is exciting now about the future?
The potential that we think our product has in terms of impacting brain health on a global scale. So the mission for the business is to delay the onset of neurological decline through scalable, accessible, science-backed brain food that you can pick up anywhere. And we are starting to believe more and more that, one, we have a really unique mechanism of action that we think has got some of the most compelling evidence in human studies on a branded food product that we'll be publishing this year. And we're starting to scratch the surface of what does it mean not only for mental performance, mood or stress, but also what does it actually mean from a brain health perspective? Because for every year that we can delay the onset of neurological decline, we can save the world up to $500 billion worth of economic burden.
Great commercial answer, which I'd expect from the commercial guy. But, you know, with a slab underlay of this of, technical stuff, I guess I now want to know what the academics got to say, like about, you know, because these guys don't have, with the greatest respect, usually don't have a great deal of commercial idea, but extremely excited, equally excited, I should say,
yeah,
extremely about the possibilities.
Yeah, yeah. My
not in his head.
My financial, I'm useless with finance.
What excites you about?
So what excites me, I think, is I've worked with a lot of companies over the years, a lot of Fortune 500 companies. They obviously have got the resources, but they're often really straitjacketed by just organizational issues. I've been in meetings at the other side of the world where they're discussing whether to fund a clinical trial, and literally the airfares of the people in that room are double the cost of the trial. It just doesn't make any sense. So I think there's something about being small, and I know it's a buzzword, but agile, that these guys are doing things which I know that some of these big Fortune 500s can't do because of their bureaucracy. So that's really exciting. There are so many elements to brain health, and the fact that these are studies in humans showing repeated benefits is incredibly exciting.
Yeah, what's interesting about you two, by the way, is whilst he's going to be excited, he's going to look at a million things, you've got to say, no, we can only do so many things. But equally...
I sit with him. I want to do all the million things as well. I'm like a kid in a candy store in those trials.
I think sometimes it's the other way around.
It's our board that keep us focused on the, you know,
That's very important because what's interesting about, you know, playing in the sandpit and, you know, having Meccano sets and being able to build, well, you might not have a Meccano set. You would definitely know what a Meccano set is, but having a Meccano set and building it, because you're too young, perhaps, for Meccano sets. But Lego is probably more your age group. I don't mean your age group. I mean your category.
I was a Lego generation.
I was Meccano. I'll go back that far. But point being here is it's easy to get distracted. And when you have an academic sense, which my gut feelings you both do, obviously on the left-hand side you do because you are an academic, but you do too, I think, also, Angus. It's the greatest disappointment to me because I'm still a prof at University of New South Wales in my area, and my biggest frustration is that academia is heavily reliant on the external or the grant system or other people giving you the money to do the work, because you can't do it for fucking nothing. I mean, it's sort of...
It's expensive.
Expensive. You've got to get it paid. You're not getting paid a lot, but you've got to get paid. And you've got to have maybe a couple of people help you. You might need a couple of PhD students who need a little bit of money just to, you know, pay their rent or whatever it is. These processes are expensive. And what I love about this is that a rapper is sort of using its own commercials to, as you said earlier, about sort of creating things that make lives better, but probably, and even helping economies, by the way, in terms of having to deal with problems that exist in the brain. But probably more importantly, just in the short term, is actually stimulating thought processes and ideas and research. And that's great. And you said a rep is probably one of the most pound for pound, probably doing more of this work than anybody else in your own category. Like in a pound. That's what I mean, pound for pound, relative to everybody else. And that's a great thing, because further inquiry, further study shouldn't be just the realm of universities, which I said do struggle. And a lot of the university game is a power game. Like, so if I'm the dean of the school, the head of this particular research division of the place, it's going to go the direction I want it to go. You know, I might like to study something completely different to alpha waves, I'm a powerful person in that environment. I'll convince the people who want to give the grants that that's where the dough should be going to. And it's a pretty shitty. I see it as a bit of a shitty process. Australia's not bad, but it's a pretty tough process in terms of getting real outcomes for all of us, especially when you talk about, you know, as I don't really. He doesn't need me to underline him, but as Peter Thiel calls them, the four horsemen, he didn't invent it. But, you know, like brain disease is definitely one of the things that you have to put in the consideration set of something that's going to kill us one day, any one of us. It's either going to be heart, brain, metabolic, or cancer. So one of those four. One of those four will get you. You die in your sleep because your heart stops. One of those four is going to get you. The one we don't seem to know much about is what's going up in the melon. And we need more work on this stuff. And by the way, it's not just Alzheimer's, it's every other bloody thing, Parkinson's, MND, blah, blah, blah. There's a whole list of them. So it's great that a rapper is actually putting money into this territory, and because it will make us live better, not longer, but better. Technology will make us live longer. You know, there's always doctors and hospitals and cures and bloody this vaccine and all these other things. They make us live longer. But we want to live better. You know, whilst we're living longer, we don't want to be, can't remember anything. You know, especially these days, you made a really good point about when they send you this text to authenticate yourself as being the person who's talking to them on email, for example. You know, like if you're 90 and you have to somehow keep going back to the text to remember, or you have to write it down, and then if some of you've written down, you might leave the piece of paper. I don't know. There's a whole lot of risk associated with that. Just being able to help someone remember four digits or six digits, as you talk about, is really important. So important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ARDIPA was selected, our Neurobury. So this is a kind of we're a Kiwi. We call ourselves an Australasian company now, and we have staff here in Australia. But at that point, we were a Kiwi company, and we were selected by an Australian dementia grant to have our Berry studied by Australian dementia researchers. And it toppled the Queen Garnet Plum because it had more of this purple color and more of this Mao effect. And so we're just like, wow, okay, I think we actually have landed on something really interesting. And if, you know, leading dementia researchers are wanting to discover it, there's something to it. There's something in there.
It's amazing how expensive those Queen Garnet Plums are per kilo. And by the way, you know, I sort of read a bit of stuff on it, and but it doesn't tell you how many you got to eat. And like, you know, like if you got, we got to eat a kilo of it every day. I don't know. Like it sort of stops. And that's another reason why this sort of research is important. And then you guys are actually saying to me, well, Mark, these blackberries are really good for you. There's something that's great for you. Polyphenols, blah, 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 blah. But we'll do the work for you. We're going to work out how much you need, and we're going to do all the work for you. We're going to put it in a bottle. How'd you price? Final question. So is it an expensive product?
So the drink is relatively premium compared to the category.
But, so what do you pay for it?
So for a can, you're probably $5.50. A glass bottle, $7. We developed a smoothie powder to get the cost down for people who need it.
It's a supplement.
150 grams smoothie powder, a supplement powder that you put into your smoothies. But what we're working on now is we've identified a bacteria that produces the same glycoside, this MAO inhibitor in our neuroberry.
The Pac-Man.
We've found that a bacteria expresses the same glycoside, and we're working with precision fermentation now to grow this glycoside without using water or land resources so that we can get a cost per dose down to under a cent. And so the goal for us over the next 3 to 5 years is to get a cost of brain food to the masses for, you know, under 10 cents.
Democratization, I love it. Then in other words, everybody can afford it.
Yeah.
Well, guys, fantastic. Arepa is now sort of jumped up in my spectrum. Like I'm much more aware of Arepa than I was before because I knew about it, but I didn't know really what it did. I never sort of dug into the weeds. I appreciate both of you indulging me with your time and thoughts and processes. I'm acutely aware of the importance of memory because of some members of my family. So I appreciate everything. I wish you the very best of luck. I mean, it's so good to see two different generations, you two, collaborating together. I'm assuming you haven't been drinking a Repra all your life. You're actually the same age as Andrew.
That's his secret.
Yeah, that could be a secret. But I appreciate it very much. Good luck to you.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.